A young man walks through monastery gates, leaving behind career prospects, romantic possibilities, personal wealth, and the freedom to shape his own days. He exchanges it all for a life of silence, obedience, and communal living in a place that operates by rules written 1,500 years ago. To the outside world, this looks like madness. But what if this ancient path reveals something we've forgotten? That the route to becoming fully human runs directly counter to everything our culture promises will make us happy. For 15 centuries, people have made this strange choice. Thomas Merton's memoir about entering monastic life sold over 1 million copies. Leonard Cohen, at the height of fame, spent years in a Zen monastery. Something about this radical commitment speaks to a hunger no amount of success, pleasure, or autonomy seems to satisfy. The monastery doesn't offer escape from reality, but immersion into it. A place where you can't hide from yourself, where every comfortable illusion gets stripped away, and where you discover that freedom might actually mean something entirely different than what you thought. Picture arriving at a monastery for the first time. The question at the gate cuts through every rehearsed answer. Friend, for what purpose have you come? You might have theological explanations ready, carefully articulated reasons that sound impressive. But the truth is, you don't fully know. The real answer only emerges through years of lived experience, revealed in moments of crisis and breakthrough you can't yet imagine. Most people who enter monastic life have experienced an inner earthquake, not necessarily a dramatic conversion like Paul on the Damascus Road, but something that shifts the ground beneath their feet. Suddenly, the goals that once seemed essential become questionable. The future you'd been building toward loses its grip. It's not primarily guilt about the past, but an inexplicable joy that makes you bold enough to walk away from everything familiar. Monasticism promises liberation through limitation. Benedict calls followers to deny oneself to oneself in order to follow Christ, not through dramatic self-denial, but through living with others according to a common rule. For individualists, communal discipline proves harder than any private penance. Eating the common meal, food you didn't choose, at a time you didn't select, becomes more penitential than fasting. You can't control the thermostat, the schedule, or who sits next to you at prayer. The monastery operates on principles that make no sense in secular terms. You're reformed not through intense personal direction, but through participation, common prayer, shared work, daily encounters with people you didn't choose and can't escape. Transformation happens through staying, not doing. Yet this discipline isn't rigid. Benedict's celebrated moderation adapts to circumstances. The abbot adjusts expectations for the weak while increasing challenge for the strong. The goal isn't suffering for its own sake, but creating conditions where desire for God doesn't get buried under comfort. Paradoxically, moderation proves harder than extremism. The vow of stability ensures you can't disguise lack of commitment through constant movement. Those who persevere often find that practices initially burdensome become sources of delight. We live in a culture obsessed with productivity, where every moment must be optimized. Benedictine leisure offers a subversive alternative, not idleness, but attentiveness to the present. It means doing fewer things well, rather than cramming maximum activities into minimum time. As novelist Don DeLillo observes, our best accomplishments derive from all the time a writer wastes. A leisurely mind remains open to reality, content not to control everything, a school of wisdom our productivity-obsessed culture desperately needs. Modern society fears boredom more than death, reflecting a nihilistic culture where nothing has objective value. Mass media degenerates the mind through images that swamp critical thought, creating what Thomas Merton called intellectual and emotional slavery. Monastic reading isn't about quantity, but attention and reflection. Reading two books simultaneously, the text itself and the book of experience. For monks, spiritual reading, Lectio Divina, keeps faith vibrant. Unlike ordinary reading, Lectio is a work of love, yielding control to God in reverence, ready to be instructed or consoled. In a world drowning in information but starving for wisdom, this ancient practice offers a radical alternative. Benedict's call to love chastity challenges a culture that dismisses it as outdated. One enters monastic life not already chaste, but to become so, a development requiring multiple skills: understanding sexuality, capacity for self-acceptance, appropriate intimacy, and taking responsibility for choices aligned with one's vocation. Chastity transcends sexual abstinence. It demands discerning responsibility, distinguishing between natural sexual responses and chosen actions through well-formed conscience. Ownership of weakness is essential. Acknowledging fragility leads to humility and dependence on God. Patience recognizes that becoming chaste is gradual, involving spiritual warfare and learning from failures. Monastic community provides essential support. European monks conscripted during World War II suddenly realized how much support they'd received from living among equally committed brothers. Community provides boundaries that protect us from ourselves, offering acceptance, affirmation, friendship, and appropriate intimacy, not through immature sentiment or rigid impersonality, but through disciplined adult mutuality. Growing in chastity parallels developing capacity for genuine intimacy with others. The monastery becomes a school of love, where we learn to move beyond narcissism toward empathy and self-giving, something our sexualized, commodified culture has largely forgotten how to teach. Shopping malls overflow with people filling inner emptiness through consumption. Against this, choosing to be poor with the poor Christ seems foolish. Yet true monastic poverty isn't romantic. It means going without, making do with less, contentedly using what's plain and cheap. Many monasteries accumulate money through donations and frugal living, rarely experiencing genuine poverty. Recruits often bring acquisitive attitudes, bearing ill grace any standard lower than their previous life, constantly pushing for things to become a little nicer. This unprincipled ameliorism destroys the monastic spirit, revealing hearts set on temporal convenience rather than heavenly citizenship. Material poverty matters, but humility is essential. Without poverty of spirit, no purity of heart is possible. True poverty strips away material distractions that hide our nothingness. We enter and leave this world naked, living precariously with nothing stable or eternal. Monastic profession ritually anticipates death as dying to the world. Benedict sees daily death remembrance as spurring fidelity. Yet Christian faith views death as eternal life's doorway. The Susape chant, "Receive me, O Christ, according to your promise, and I shall live," serves equally for profession, deathbed, and daily living, reminding us that ultimate freedom comes not from accumulation, but from letting go. Perseverance means allowing God's grace to complete what it initiated, actively continuing the same basic task year after year, decade after decade. Modern life emphasizes mobility, geographically, professionally, relationally. People approach commitments like a supermarket, wanting backup options that often make failure easier. The vow of stability isn't based on unchanging community life, but on God's unchanging fidelity. Like earthquake-resistant buildings that sway rather than resist tremors, stability isn't immobility, but constancy amid change. The Latin root stare, to stand, suggests standing exhausts, while walking alternates work and rest indefinitely. Paradoxically, stability becomes a springboard to the future. Union with God and community often emerges through failure and neediness, requiring persistent plodding when efforts seem vain. As one monk told Malcolm Muggeridge, "It's a hard bed to lie on, but a soft bed to die on." Monastic life brings beauty from spending life in a single pursuit, attached to one place, living with the same people. You become free to be yourself, no longer hiding behind masks, surrounded by memories that compel truthfulness. A sense of continuity develops. This is where I belong. This is my home. In a world selling happiness through endless options and constant reinvention, the monastery whispers a different truth. Depth comes from commitment. Freedom emerges from constraint. And becoming fully human requires staying put long enough to discover who you really are. These ancient strangers challenge our age of distraction with a provocative question. What if the life you're chasing keeps you from truly living?